Well, so about me going. The preacher unbuckled his fancy holster. He pulled it off and reached it and his mystery pistol toward Mr. Leroy. He said, "Here. Now, it doesn't cost near what you're paying for your family, and it's nowhere close to being as dear. But you know how I feel about this pistol. You'll be the first person to touch it since I got it. You know I'm not leaving this behind." Mr. Leroy said,
"It ain't necessary, Zeph. I trust you."
The preacher pushed it into Mr. Leroy's chest and said, "I trust you too. I trust you to hold on to this until I come back with the good word that everything's set to go." The preacher smiled. "I'm also trusting you not to drop my pistol into any water either." Mr. Leroy said,
"Zeph, I ain't saying I don't appreciate you doing this, but I'd feel better if you was armed whilst you carried all that money."
The preacher pulled open his waistcoat and showed Mr. Leroy the old pistol that he let me shoot off once and said,
"Oh, don't you worry, Brother Leroy. I'd not go into that den of vipers unprepared."
Mr. Leroy said,
"In that case, Zeph, hurry on back. I'm gonna make sure your pistol don't get near no water."
The preacher said to Paul,
"Tell Brother Theodore I'll be back a bit before noon. Tell him to ask Mr. Segee for a strong horse. We're going to ride hard."
The preacher jumped back up on Champion and tore down the road toward Chatham. Paul watched him and said,
"I wish it weren't so, but I just ain't feeling good about this."
Chapter 17. Bad news from a little village in America.
Time don't never go so slow as when you're waiting on someone to bring you news. Word spread about Mr. Leroy being able to buy his family, and whilst Tim and me worked clearing Mrs. Holton's field, all sorts of folks came up to us and gave him their regards and good wishes. Mr. Leroy didn't work no slower nor no faster whilst we waited to hear from the preacher, Mr. Highgate. He just kept plugging away at the trees like he always did, making the same music, stopping every time someone came up only long enough to see if they were going to tell him something. Once he saw they weren't, he was respectful, but went right back at swinging that axe. After 4 days crawled by, talk started up about sending someone to that village in Michigan to see if there was a problem. Didn't no one own up to being worried, but everybody was. On the 5th day after the preacher Mr. Highgate left, me and old Flapjack were rock fishing at our secret lake. I just chunked a good-sized perch and was pulling him in when old Flap gave one of them snorts, meaning someone was near. I quit concentrating on the perch and raised my head. I heard Cuda calling my name from far off. "Cuda, I'm down here." He ran up on me and waited a second for his breathing to catch up to him, then said,
"They bringing Mr. Highgate in from Windsor on a wagon."
"Bringing?"
"Uh-huh. Some folk we don't know from Windsor got him loaded on a wagon."
"How come he ain't riding Jingle Boy?"
"I don't know, Eli. They say there's a horse tied up behind the wagon."
"Where's he at now?"
"They said he's about half an hour outside Buxton, but that was afore I left to come find you."
"What'd they say about Mr. Leroy's family?"
"Didn't no one say nothing. A rider just came by and brung the news that Mr. Highgate got hurt bad."
I said, "What about?" Coulda read my mind. He said,
"They said the preacher ain't with him."
My heart sunk. That could only mean someone had robbed him and killed the preacher or snatched him into slavery. I knowed I should go find Mr. Leroy and let him know we got word. But after I thought on it for a second, it came to me that I didn't really have nothing to tell him. Ma's always saying, believe some to none of what you hear, and only half of what you see. So I didn't think I should run to tell Mr. Leroy some bad news that I weren't sure had really happened. I told Cuda, come on. If you run down the road, maybe we can catch the wagon before they get to Buxton. Cuda said, you go head on, Eli. I've been hightailing all over these woods looking for you. I ain't got no more strength for running. All right. You ride old Flapjack back, and I'm going to try to head off that wagon. Gather up my fishing things, and you can have two of those bass on the stringer. Take the rest to my maw. Soon as I broke out of the woods onto the road, I saw fresh wagon wheel marks. They must have already passed. I ran back into the trees to try and cut them off farther on down. Right after I turned the first bend, I could hear a wagon ahead, so I ran through the woods to where they were going to have to pass. It weren't but a minute later that I saw two horses pulling a big wagon with Jingle Boy tied up behind. I waved at him. The driver pulled the horses up and said, you heading to Buxton, son? Yes, sir, but I'm looking for... A hand gripped onto the stakes of the wagon bed. A man's head peeked over the side and he said, Elijah, that you... I knowed it had to be Mr. Highgate, but at first I didn't recognize him. He said, it's me, boy. My heart dropped down into my stomach. It was Mr. Highgate, and he didn't look nothing like the way he looked when he left 5 days ago. I felt my knees get all loose and floppity, like I was going to fall into a heap right next to the wagon. The driver reached down and pulled me up on the seat next to him. I looked back at Mr. Highgate. His left eye was open, but the right one was swole shut. There was a line running clean across his forehead that was so straight, it looked like someone had took a measuring stick and cut along it with a knife. The cut had gone bad and was bandaged up, but it still was leaking something from the sides. Mr. Highgate was kind of choking as he talked. He said, he done shot me. He done shot me. He wasn't saying it all riled up and worried or scared and mad like you'd expect someone that got shot would say it. He was saying it like it was a surprised little prayer. Like he was thinking if he said it over and over, he might get a hold on to what happened. Elijah, he done shot me. He tried to take my head off. The driver said, he ain't been in his right mind the whole time. Keep on mumbling about someone named Zephariah. I climbed into the wagon's bed and put Mr. Highgate's head in my lap. We weren't but a mile outside Buxton when a bunch of grown folks came running at us. Paul was out front. Paul! Paul jumped into the wagon, looked at Mr. Highgate, and called to Mr. Segee.
Clarence, ride on to Chatham and get the doctor. He been shot.
Mr. Segee ran toward Buxton. Paul said,
Theodore, what happened?
Mr. Highgate said,
Spencer, I done let Leroy down. I ain't done nothing to stop him. I tried. I swear I did. But he shot me.
Paul said,
talk slow, Theo. Tell me what happened.
Mr. Highgate said,
didn't nothing go right. We's cursed soon as we left Canada. Soon as we get on the ferry to Michigan, Zephariah start in acting peculiar. First thing he done is take that old pistol he showed y'all out of his waistcoat and ask me if I wanted to hold on to it. You know I ain't real partial to no kind of pistol, Spencer. So I tells him, no thanks, I got my shotgun. That's plenty enough for me. He say, suit yourself, and I'll be blamed if he don't toss that old pistol right in the Detroit River. I asked him how come he done that, and he say he don't need that one. He got him something better. Then he go in his saddlebag and pull out the exact same gun and holster like the one he gave to Leroy for safekeeping. The exact same one. I knowed right then all them stories about him killing them white twins weren't gossip at all. It was gospel.
Pa had a look on his face like someone told him he was about to get shot at sunrise. All he said was, "Oh."
Mr. Highgate said, "Then once we get them horses unloaded off the ferry, he start in on acting like he don't know me. He won't say nothing to me. He carry on like he don't hear none of the questions I's asking him. We just plod on up the road to this little logging village. I ain't feeling no danger. You know how strange he be some of the time. I just figure he ain't letting nothing pull him off getting up there to talk to that there white man. I was hoping against hope everything's still fine. Once we gets to that village, he tell me it's too late to go see this white man, that we gonna have to hold on till tomorrow. I still ain't sensing nothing wrong. We pull up in this alley, and I spread me a blanket and tries to get some rest. I has the hardest time getting to sleep, since I just laying there with my eyes shut. Couple hours later, I seen Zephyr's real quiet walking off, toting the bag with all of Leroy's money and gold in it. I calls after him, and he tell me he know where some gambling's going on, and he figure if Leroy's money could buy three people what was slaves, then he could gamble him up two times that sum and free six of them. I gives him a look like I ain't about to consider no nonsense such as that. Then he asks me if freeing six weren't better than freeing three.
Mr. Highgate said,
"Spencer," a chill run up my back. I told him, Zeff, ain't no one gonna gamble none that money. He laugh and say, "Don't worry, ain't no gamble the way I play cards." I tells him, "As long as I's here, you ain't playing nothing." And I reach for my shotgun and aims it at his knee. He look at me cold as a viper, like he don't believe I's serious. I tells him, "You gonna leave all that money and gold right here, else ain't both of us coming out this here alley the same way we come in." He laugh again and say, "You ain't got no idea how hard it is to kill a man." He say, "You ain't got the heart to shoot no one." And he pull that pistol out the holster and hold it down at his side.
Mr. Highgate went on,
"What could I do? I draws a bead right on his knee so as he can see I ain't fooling. All he do is stare me in my eye and start to raise that pistol. I can't think about nothing but all them years Leroy done worked, and how as Ziff left with that gold, we were never gonna see him no more."
Paul said,
"Lord, today."
Mr. Highgate said,
"He was right. I ain't never even point no gun at no man in my life, Spencer."
Paul said,
"Ain't no one gonna fault you for not shooting him, Theo."
Mr. Highgate said,
"It ain't like that. I tried. I steadies the shotgun, pulls that trigger, and..."
Me and Paul quit breathing. Mr. Highgate said,
"And don't nothing happen. Just a loud click. I ain't never heard no sound so terrible in my whole life. I knowed I had that shotgun loaded, and just as quick I knowed some way he done unload it. I must have dozed off and didn't know it. He get a smile on his face what looked like death itself, and raised that pistol till it aiming dead twixt my eyes. I remember thinking I done let Leroy down. I remember thinking, what no good tall in the world if this was gonna happen? If this rapscallion was gonna get away with this crime? I remember thinking about my wife.
Then I remember getting lift off my feet. And I don't recall nothing else till a couple of days pass. Once I come to, some free folks up in the logging town was tending to me. A man and his wife, mighty fine folk, took good care of me and didn't want nothing in return.
Mr. Highgate fumbled in the top pocket of his jacket. He pulled out a piece of paper and said,
I asked him to write their name down so that I could send them some of my syrup as a kind of thank you. They even borrowed a wagon to carry me to Detroit, then set it up with this here man to bring me to Buxton.
He handed me the paper. It had Red Cross it in rough letters, Benjamin Alston, 509 Wilbur Place. Mr. Highgate's mind seemed to leave him. I tried handing him the paper back, but he pushed my hand away and said,
He shot me. He really done shot me.
Paul said,
Hold on to it, Elijah.
I folded the paper back up and put it in my pocket. Paul said,
Theodore, try to remember. You didn't hear nothing more on Zephaniah.
Mr. Highgate said,
Mr. Alston say where it was that Zeph be drinking and carousing and gambling. They say he winning big and cleaning all them white folks out their money. But I ain't in no condition to look him up, Spencer. I figured it best I'd get back here and let Leroy and the rest of y'all know.
Mr. Highgate started talking in that surprised little voice again. He said,
He done try to blow my head off, Spencer. He done try to kill me to steal Leroy's money.
I knowed better. I knowed if the preacher had aimed to blow Mr. Highgate's head off, he'd have blowed it clean off. I knowed the preacher weren't looking to kill him. Paul said,
Don't the woe never end. How much is we expected to bear? How much?
Mr. Highgate said,
You're going to have to bring Leroy to me, because I can tell him what happened.
Paul said,
No, Theodore. You done everything you could. I'ma tell him.
He looked at me and said,
Come on, son. We's going to have to go down to Mrs. Holton's and let Leroy know about this calamity.
Me and Paul jumped out of the wagon and started walking toward Mrs. Holton's land. I ain't never seen Paul's head hang so low. I'd know better than to say nothing. Then out of the blue, something came to me. This whole mess was no one's fault but my own. If I hadn't have told Mr. Leroy that the preacher wasn't going to steal his money, none of this would have happened. If I'd have listened to what Paul told me and hadn't stuck my nose in grown folks' business, it wouldn't have happened at all. You'd think I'd have come clean and told Paul, but the way he was looking, I think it would have killed him to know his own big mouth flesh and blood was the cause of all this grieving. We both walked and hung our heads low as the belly on a fat snake and didn't talk about nothing. We saw Mr. Leroy from about a half mile off. There weren't much you could really see, excepting for the sun flashing off the axe when he swung it. When we were close enough to see the sweat flying and hear all the music, Paul called out,
Leroy.
Mr. Leroy took one more swing and left the axe biting in the tree. He looked at us and didn't know words need be exchanged. He squozed his eyes shut for a second, let out a long breath, sat down, and said,
What? What now?
Paul walked right up on him and said,
Zeph done run off with the money, Leroy. He shot Theodore, then left him for dead.
Mr. Leroy said,
Theodore's dead.
Paul said,
No, He been shot, but it don't look too bad. The money's gone, Leroy. Zeph's gambling it away up in Michigan.
Mr. Leroy didn't say nothing. Then the most terrific thing happened. Mr. Leroy showed his teeth like a madman and snatched that axe out of the oak and raised it over his head. I knowed he figured out who started all this and was going to split me clean in two. This time, my legs didn't get soft and loosey. They got strong. Before he could bring that axe down, me and Mr. Leroy both screamed, and I lit out for the woods. I looked back, and Mr. Leroy flung that axe toward one of the oaks on Mrs. Holton's land. It hit about 30 feet up and stuck there. Then he cut off into the woods in the other direction. I figured he was going to circle around to catch me, so I ran deeper into the woods fast as I could. I was running so hard, it seemed like the trees started stepping aside, like they knowed if I hit them, they'd get knocked clean over. I was running like the wind. I didn't feel nor hear nothing except in my heart. It seemed like it jumped right out of my chest and came to rest twixt my ears. Close as the branches on the trees were slapping by me, I knowed they had to be giving me some pretty good whoopings, but I didn't feel nothing. All I was worrying about was getting away afore Mr. Leroy could bring me down with his axe. All I was thinking about was running faster than anybody'd ever run afore. I must have run for an hour. I was going fast, all right, but it weren't fast enough. All of a sudden, there was a hand round my collar, and I was getting snatched right off my feet from behind and pulled down. I hit the ground so hard and sudden that my mouth came open and I swallowed a bunch of dirt and old dead leaves. I hope Mr. Leroy didn't tarry when he cut me in two. I hoped I didn't get the chance to do too much screaming and begging. I put my hands over my eyes and waited to get killed.
Chapter 18. Kidnapped.
I don't know how long I stayed curled up in a ball on the ground before I started hearing Mr. Leroy over top of me. He was gasping loud whilst he waited for his breathing to catch a hold of him so as he could do a proper job of chopping me up. I thought about getting up and running again, but my legs were so tired and shakety that they weren't going to do nothing but lay there hoping it weren't them he'd hit first. Mr. Leroy got a hold of his breathing and said,
"Boy, has you lost your natural mind?"
The peculiar thing was that even though he was having a powerful hard time talking, he didn't sound at all like himself. He sounded a whole lot like Paul. Instead of cleaving me like firewood, he said,
"Now get up."
It was Paul. Paul kept fighting to breathe regular and said,
"All I need, you taking leave of your senses at a time like this. When you gone stop this running nonsense and stand up to what's in front of you?"
I said, "But Paul, he was going to kill me." He said,
"What? Why on earth would Leroy want to kill you?"
"He knowed it was because of me all this happened. It's all my fault. I told him the preacher wasn't no thief."
Paul said, "Hush that foolishness. This ain't none of your fault. This ain't no one's fault. Leroy wanted his family so bad that he weren't thinking clear. You couldn't have said nothing to change him one way or another. Let this here be a lesson to you. You can't let your wantings blind you to what's the truth. You always got to look at things the way they is, not the way you wish them to be."
I knowed what Paul was doing. Since him and Ma still think I'm so doggone fragile, they're always looking out for me, always trying to make it so I don't feel bad about something I did that's total foolish. But after a while, you're old enough and you got to own up to what you did, right or wrong.
and could no one tell me that all this horribleness didn't start with me? Paul said,
Come on. We got to get back to the settlement. I'm going to call a meeting so we can do something about catching that yellow-bellied dog of a blamed thief.
I knowed better than to say anything more. Paul don't swear much, and when he does, it's a sign that all talking from me is supposed to be through. Paul said,
You'd near about caused my heart to jump clean out my chest of all that running. You tearing off in one direction, and Leroy tearing off in the other. I's too old to be chasing after folks like a hound dog. Let me sit a minute so's I can get my wind.
Once Paul's breathing catched up to him good, we headed back. I was sore disappointed in myself. Not for running off like I did. That only made good sense. Ain't nothing fragile about running when you think you about to get axed by someone strong as Mr. Leroy. No. I was shamed because of how far I'd got. I reckon I must have covered 2-3 miles. But once me and Paul got walking toward the road, I saw I hadn't gone no more than 200-300 feet. This was mighty puzzling, but the only thing I could figure was I must have done a lot of running around in circles, which would probably be why Paul caught me so easy. Paul and the other elders called a meeting in the church for that night. Me and Emma Collins and Sidney and Johnny had to run through the settlement to let folks know. Most people had heard what happened and said they'd be there. About an hour before the meeting was supposed to commence, I finished my supper and walked onto the stoop and heard Ma say to Paul,
Then what we gonna do with Lijah?
I said, Pardon me for interrupting, Ma, but what you mean? Do with me. Ma said,
I don't want you coming to this meeting, Elijah.
Folks likely gonna be talking a lot of bad things, and it ain't right for no child young as you to be hearing all that nonsense. Especially since you such a...
I know it ain't right. But I butted in on Ma before she had a chance to get any words out about me being a fragile boy.
I said, But Ma, I can't miss this. Maybe they're going to need my help with something.
Ma and Paul looked at one another, and Paul said, Well, if they do, we going to be sure to let you know about it.
Ma said, Is Mrs. Bixby going to come to the meeting?
Ma knowed most times Cooter's Ma didn't come out of their home. Cooter's grandma was near about 50 years old and frail and ailing, and Mrs. Bixby was afeard of leaving her for even a minute.
I said, No, ma'am. Mrs. Bixby said her Ma wasn't getting on too good, and she was going to stay with her.
Ma said, All right, then. I want you to run on over there and ax if it be all right for her to look after you whilst we's at the meeting.
But, Ma!
Ma held up her hand to show there wasn't no more to say. Then she told me,
And you might as well ax if you can sleep there tonight and go to school with Cooter tomorrow, because ain't no telling when this here meeting's going to break up. And you know how you is if you don't get your sleep.
She was making it sound like I was a baby in a crib.
I said, But Ma!
Pa said, Don't be back talking your Ma, Elijah. Go get your school clothes so you can go tomorrow morning with Cooter.
Yes, sir.
Grown folks sure never want to give no one the respect they're supposed to get. Here I've been working hard on not being fragile, and Ma and Pa hadn't even took no notice of it. I went and got my clothes for school the next day and put them in a tote sack along with my school shoes and school books. Fair's fair, and it weren't the littlest bit fair that I was going to be cut out from all the deciding what to do about this mess I caused. Whilst I was toting my clothes and such to Cooter's, I started thinking on what was going to happen at the meeting tonight. I didn't know if they were going to put a search party together for Mr. Leroy, or if they were going to even try to get a posse up
that would go to America and try to run the preacher down. Whatever it was they came up with, I knowed it weren't fair that I wouldn't get to know till tomorrow after I finished my chores at the barn. That weren't going to be till after 8 in the evening. And it just didn't seem right that the person that caused all this woe had to let other folks clean up behind him. It weren't till I was just up the road from Cuda and Nim's house that another great idea started coming to me. By the time I knocked at Cuda's, the idea was set in my head. Mrs. Bixby answered the door. She said,
"Good evening, Elijah. How are you doing?"
"Good evening, Mrs. Bixby. I'm doing good, ma'am. How are you?"
"Just fine as can be."
She pointed at my bag and said, "You ran away from home, Elijah?" "No, ma'am, Mrs. Bixby. Ma and Pa were wondering if it's all right if I stay with you tonight, 'cause that meeting might go on till tomorrow." Mrs. Bixby said,
"Elijah, you tell your ma, any time she need me to look after her baby, she don't even got to ask."
Doggone it all. Didn't no one say nothing about no baby. Seems to me ain't no one over the age of 5 needs to be called a baby. Seems to me, even the most fragilest child in the world wouldn't be called a baby once he's darn near 12-year-old. I was about this close to giving Cuda's ma some back talk. But instead I said, "Thank you, ma'am." Then I sneaked in the lie I had to tell. "Ma wants me to walk on over to the church for about an hour so I can help decide what we're going to do about this trouble. Can Cuda walk over with me?" I figured me and Cuda would both get to eavesdrop on the grown folks' meeting.
"That's fine, Elijah. But don't be counting on Cuda to go with you. School teacher Travis just come by and said the boys acting the dunce at school again."
She opened the screen door, and I saw Cuda standing in a corner with his nose mashed up against the walls. She said,
"Boy been standing in that corner so much these past few years, he done wore a spot out in the floorboards."
I said, "Yes, ma'am. And now Mr. Leroy's run off and ain't round to fix it neither." Mrs. Bixby raised her eyebrow to let me know she was wondering if I was being smart mouth. I said real fast, "I didn't mean no disrespect, ma'am."
"None taken. Here, Elijah, drink this. Your friend ain't get nothing to eat nor drink till he learned to act right in school. And I hate seeing this glass of milk go to waste."
I drunk Cuda's milk. Then Mrs. Bixby made me drink 2 more glasses of it till there weren't none left.
She said, "Carry your bag to Cuda's room, Elijah. And don't be trying to talk to that dunce neither. Another thing he gonna be doing till he turn 30 is keeping his mouth shut."
"Yes, ma'am." I ran my bag back to Cuda's room and told Mrs. Bixby, "I'm going to go back home and tell Ma you said it was fine for me to stay here tonight. Then I'm going to go to that meeting for a while."
She said, "You be careful and hurry back. I hear Leroy done lost his mind and is wondering about. Here he done throwed one axe 100 feet up into a tree and throwed the next one so high it poked the man in the moon in the eye."
"Yes, ma'am. I won't be long." I weren't going to spend 1 minute thinking Mr. Leroy was going to hurt no one. I knowed him better than that. That weren't nothing but some more gossip and story pretty upping. I figured I was going to have about an hour to eavesdrop on the meeting before I had to get back to Cuda's home. I walked toward the church, but went into the woods so I could come at it from the back, and no one could see me eavesdropping. It was peculiar to see the church all lit up from candles on a Thursday night. Most times, it didn't look like this unless it was Sunday evening, or unless there was a service for someone that had gone and died. It was also mighty peculiar, because there weren't none of the regular church sounds coming out of the place. There weren't no foot stamping, nor no hand clapping, nor no tambourine shaking to make you happy.
There weren't even none of the choir singing to make the place seem so warm and comforted and cozy that afore you knowed it, some grown person was digging their elbow in your ribs to wake you up. I knowed why the church was so different tonight, and it weren't cause of the full moon, neither. Tonight, folks weren't interested in nothing but straightening out my mess. There were only a few folks there already. They were keeping their voices low inside the church, and only once in the while could I understand somebody shouting out, "Yes, sir," or "Lord Almighty." Those were interesting things to hear, but what was more important was hearing what had made folks call out so. If I was going to eavesdrop proper, I'd have to crawl right under the church's floorboards. I remember what Paul said about people that used to be slaves and how they never let a chance of being late get by them. So I knowed I was going to have to wait out here for a while till the church filled up and all the stragglers had made it in. I was this close to being out of the tree line when I heard a twig snap behind me. I did what every fawn in the woods does whenever it gets come up on by surprise. I froze right where I was at. But it was too late. Afore I could turn around to see what was sneaking up on me, a rough hand came across my face from behind, and I was getting squoze round the middle, lifted off my feet, and tore it back into the woods. I'd seen how when a mouse gets grabbed up by a cat, it won't fight or twitch or do nothing to try to get away. I'd seen that and never could get in my head why it happened. I used to think if it was me that got snatched like that, I'd fight and kick and make that cat earn eating me up. I always used to say that I weren't going to go down that cat's throat without a fight, without at least getting me some good bites in on his tongue as I was getting swallowed. But I could see now that I was wrong, because once this haint, or this killer, or this kidnapper, or this slaver, or this demon that had grabbed me, lifted me up in the air light as a piece of straw, and pulled me deeper into the woods, I know there was no sense in fighting or nothing. I was feeling just what that mouse must have been feeling. I didn't want to drag things out none by tussling. I just wish this getting killed would be over quick.
Chapter 19. A ball starts rolling.
Whatever snatched me up was starting to get tired. The way it had me mashed up against it, I could feel its heart flopping around in its chest like a fish that had got throwed up on the land. It commenced breathing hard and finally dropped me on the ground. Soon's it let me go, I forgot all that nonsense about mice and cats, and I tried to light out for the trees. I didn't get far, 'cause a root seemed like it reached up and tripped me back to the ground. You'd have thought with as many times as I'd been stumbled up and thrown to the ground, I'd have learned to keep my mouth shut once I was about to hit. But that's another one of those lessons that don't seem to stick, 'cause soon as I banged down, I got a mouthload of twigs and dirt and dried up leaves. I felt round to see if maybe I could get hold of a chunking stone and go down fighting, but my fingers weren't running over nothing but more roots and twigs. I turned round to see what it was that had snatched me and saw a sight that terrified me to my soul. 'Twas Mr. Leroy, and he looked just like someone that had died but didn't know it. He was holding on to his left arm and breathing hard. He said, "Elijah, I needs you." I spit the dirt and leaves out of my mouth and told him, "I'm sorry, Mr. Leroy. I didn't know he was going to steal your money. I swear I didn't know, sir." Mr. Leroy held up his hand so as I'd give him a chance to catch on to his breathing. He said,
"Boy, I know you didn't know nothing. Ain't no one's fault but my own, and that thieving fool's. But I do hope you're going to help me out. Elijah, I'm lost. I ain't got no one else what I can turn to."
Mr. Leroy leaned up against a tree and kept having a hard time finding his breathing. I stood up and went over to him and said,
Mr. Leroy, I don't care what you and Paul say. I know it's 'cause of me that all this happened, and I'll do anything you want to try to help, sir. Anything. All you got to do is tell me. What Mr. Leroy said made my blood run cold and my legs get shakety. He said,
I got to go to that village in Michigan and see if any of that money's left. And if it ain't none left, I'm gonna find Zephariah and shoot him down for stealing my dreams of getting my family out. I'm gonna look him in the eye and make sure he die a terrible death.
I'd heard tell about people that you could look at and see death was walking right next to him. When I looked at Mr. Leroy and heard the hard, cold way he was saying those words, I'd knowed what that meant. Some of those words might be freed people prettifying things, but some of it was real. It was easy to see that death had its arm round Mr. Leroy, propping him up, taking its time, waiting to walk with him into Michigan to grab a hold of the preacher. Mr. Leroy put his hand on his side, and I saw he was wearing the preacher's fancy holster and mystery pistol. All of a sudden, I didn't feel so brave. But, sir, I can't help with that. I don't know where he's at. Mr. Leroy said,
I need you to come with me, 'cause I can't read, Lijah. Plus, I ain't comforted dealing with white folks like you is. I ain't got the intention of letting no man, not even no white man, pull me off from what I got to do. And I need you to help.
But, Mr. Leroy, there are slave catchers over in Michigan. How are we going to stop someone from trying to kidnap us?
Boy, the way you talks, no one in the world going to think you ever been no slave. All they got to do is look at you. They know you born free. And if we got to use this pistol, then we got to use this pistol.
So does that mean you're going to force me to come with you, sir?
I'm terrible sorry, Elijah. But a ball done started rolling downhill. What ain't going to be stopped. We both going to Michigan.
Then that means I ain't got no choice, sir?
I'm afeard not, son.
I told him, great. I was just making sure, Mr. Leroy. I'd know if Ma and Pa found out I went to Michigan on my own accord, they'd skin me alive once I got back. This way, I can tell them, and tell them true, that I got kidnapped, and I ain't gonna be in near as much trouble. Thank you, sir. Mr. Leroy said,
I do hope you ain't gonna be talking no spools of nonsense whilst we's going. I really can't take that, Elijah. I think it'd be best if we goes along being quiet.
Yes, sir. Mr. Leroy said,
I borrowed a horse from the barn. We gonna make good time.
We walked deeper into the woods. Jingle Boy's reins were tied to a tree. Mr. Leroy climbed on his back and reached down to pull me up. I began seeing that Mr. Leroy hadn't done no planning about this. It was like Paul had said. He weren't seeing things the way they were. He was still seeing things the way he wanted them to be. I said, Mr. Leroy, we can't just go right off to Michigan like this, sir. Cooter's Ma's expected me to go to her house tonight. He turned round and said,
So? If things go good, you's gonna be back tomorrow, day after at the most.
Well, sir, if I don't show up tonight, they're gonna think something happened to me. And I ain't meaning to be disrespectful, sir, but folks are saying you lost your mind and are out in the woods wondering about chunking axes at the moon. If they put those two things together, they're going to figure you grabbed me and we're heading to Michigan. And Paul likes you a powerful lot, sir. But if he thinks you kidnapped me, he's going to come ripping out after us like his hair's afire. Then there's going to be some big problems, and we ain't going to be able to catch a hold of the preacher. Mr. Leroy reined in Jingle Boy and said,
"Well, that makes sense. What do you think we should do?"
"Let me go back to Cooter's home and tell Mrs. Bixby that Ma and Pa changed their mind and that I can't spend the night there. That way, Ma and Pa will think I'm sleeping at Cooter's, and Cooter's Ma will think I'm sleeping at home. It won't be no big problem that I miss school tomorrow. Ma and Pa will figure I'm there. Then with tomorrow being Friday, I gotta do my chores at the barn right after classes, and then they'll think I went fishing. So will no one know I'm kidnapped till after 8 o'clock tomorrow evening. By that time, we'll be back. Won't we?"
"We can't be back no later than Saturday, sir. I got a big examination on Latin verbs Monday, and I ain't done the proper amount of studying yet."
Mr. Leroy said,
"I knowed it was the right thing to bring you along. You got a real keen mind, Elijah. I figure you can think us through near about anything. I'm powerful sorry I got to drag you into this, son. You keep in mind, you saving me. But you're going to have to work hard on cutting down on some of that talking you like to do."
I showed Mr. Leroy the quickest way to get to Cooter's through the woods. Before I jumped off Jingle Boy's back, Mr. Leroy turned round and looked me hard in the face.
"You know, if you was to take off, there ain't nothing I could do. You tell me now, Elijah. You tell me so's I ain't gonna waste no more time waiting on you. Is you gonna come back? There any need for me to wait? Or should I just leave now, alone?"
I raised my right hand and told him, "Mr. Leroy, sir, I swear on my mama's head that I'm coming right back." I slid off Jingle Boy and ran out of the woods and down the road to Cooter's home. The screen door was shut, but the main door was open. I knocked. Mrs. Bixby held the door open and said,
"That sure weren't long."
I tried to look sad and said,
"No, ma'am. Folks weren't too much in the mood for talking."
She said,
"So what they gonna do? They gonna try to run that thief down?"
"Uh-oh."
I said, "They made me leave before I found out." She laughed and said,
"That's good. I was kind of surprised your folks let you go to that meeting in the first place."
She looked over in the corner, where Cooter was still mashing his nose up against the walls. She said to me and him both,
"But Elijah, you's a whole lot more grown than some other folks your age."
I said, "Ma and Pa changed their mind, ma'am. I can't stay with you all tonight. I gotta go back home and go to school tomorrow and go do my chores right after class and then go fishing. I'ma probably be out of everyone's sight till near about 8 tomorrow evening, maybe a little later if the fishing don't do good. And judging by the way it went the other day, I might even be later than that. So no one should think I got kidnapped and come looking for me till probably a whole lot later than most times." I tried to look sadder. She said,
"That's fine, Elijah. You can stay on some other night. Your bag's where you left it at."
I walked into Cooter's room to get my bag, but I reached inside and got a paper and a pencil to write a note. I went over to the window so as the full moonlight would let me see. I wrote, "Dear Cooter, how are you? Fine, I hope. I'm doing good, except that Mr. Leroy's gone and kidnapped me and took me fighting all the way to Michigan. We're looking for the preacher and Mr. Leroy's money. He ain't crazy nor trying to hit the man in the moon. He just wants his family back. I begged him not to take me, but he say I got to go. We going to be coming back tomorrow, round supper time. Tell my ma and pa they do not got to send no money, and they do not got to worry, 'cause Mr. Leroy swore he is going to take good care of me."
Cooter's ma called out from the parlor, "Elijah, what you doing?
It don't take that long to get no bag.
I said, I'm sorry, Mrs. Bixby. I was writing Cooter a note to say I'll see him tomorrow, since I ain't allowed to talk to him. She said to Cooter,
See,
how come you ain't more like that boy?
I had to finish quick. Sincerely, your friend, Elijah Freeman. I read what I'd read and figured I'd best put in one more part. P.S. Don't give this to my ma and pa until Saturday morning, else Mr. Leroy will cut my throat and bleed me like a pig. I had to put the throat-cutting part in, because every once in a while, my luck ain't real good. And whilst I can most times count on Cooter to do what's wrong, he might have got afeard and tried to do what was right with this. But if he thought I was going to get bleated like a pig, I'd knowed he'd do what was wrong and wouldn't tell no one. I went back into their parlor and said to Mrs. Bixby, Ma'am, can I give this note to Cooter? She said, Go ahead on, Elijah, then hurry home. Tell your ma I asked about her. Yes, ma'am. I went to Cooter about as close as I could get and said, Cooter, this here note's for you. I put the note in his hand. Long as she was in the room, Cooter was real good at doing everything his ma told him to do, and he weren't about to move his nose out of that corner. He looked at me from the side of his eyes, and I blinked twice at him, and he blinked twice back at me. I felt better because that meant he knew that note was powerful important and needed to be studied hard. I said, Thank you kindly, Mrs. Bixby, and good night.
Good night, Elijah.
Then she said to Cooter,
Where's your manners at?
Say good night to Elijah.
Cooter kept his nose plumb in that corner and called out,
Good night, Eli.
Good night, Cooter. I left the Bixby home and started down the road toward my own home. Soon's I was far enough long that I knowed Mrs. Bixby couldn't see me, I cut into the woods and headed back to where I left Mr. Leroy. He didn't smile or nothing, but I could see it was a weight off his mind to see me. He said,
I knowed you was a good man, Elijah.
He reached down and pulled me up onto Jingle Boy. I wrapped my arms round Mr. Leroy's waist and said, Now I got to go back home and get some things I'm going to need, Mr. Leroy. Ma and Pa must be at the meeting by now, so no one won't see me. Jingle Boy picked his way through the trees, heading toward my home, and I asked Mr. Leroy, How far off is this village in Michigan, sir?
Ain't far at all, Eli. Less than an hour from Detroit on this here horse.
How are we going to know where to look for the preacher?
He ain't going to be hard to find if he there.
That didn't make no sense. That didn't make no sense at all. If the preacher really had stole Mr. Leroy's money, seemed to me like he tried to make himself real hard to find. I said, But Mr. Leroy, what if he's gone? He shot at Mr. Highgate 5 days ago. I don't think he's going to be waiting round for no one to come get him. Mr. Leroy pulled Jingle Boy to a stop. He turned round and looked at my face and said,
Elijah, what'd you want me to say? I ain't got no other choice but to go and try to find him. I ain't got no other choice of getting my family back. You can talk all you want. We's going to Michigan.
I knowed right at that second how smart my pa was. He was exactly right when he said Mr. Leroy was looking at things the way he wanted them to be, not the way they really were. But I also knowed that if I weren't there to try to think things through for Mr. Leroy, there weren't no way at all he was ever going to find the preacher. I knowed Mr. Leroy's heart was so bust up that I was going to have to do the thinking for both of us. Mr. Leroy let me off Jingle Boy a ways in the woods so's I could walk up to our house. When I got there, my heart quit beating because when I pulled the door to go in, Ma and Pa were pushing it to go out. They were as surprised to see me as I was to see them.
Elijah, what are you doing here? Can't Mrs. Bixby watch you?
Yes, ma'am. She said she can watch me any time you want. Except that she's confused and caught it looking after your baby.
Ma smiled and said,
Well, she don't know you too old to be called no baby, do she?
We ain't gonna say nothing to her about it, though. She don't mean no harm.
Yes, ma'am.
Pa said,
Answer what your ma asked, Elijah. What you doing here?
I lied. I forgot my geometry school book and had to come back.
Well, run on in and get it, son. We just about to leave.
Yes, sir. Doggone it all. Weren't gonna be no way to get no food nor provisions for this trip, with Ma and Pa waiting on me. I went back into my bedroom and picked up another tote sack and put a book in it. I got ready to leave my room, then stopped, because I got to thinking about something. Since me and Mr. Leroy were about to take a dangerous trip, and he had the preacher's fancy pistol in case anything bad happened, I thought maybe I should take something along, too. I put about 20 of the best chunking stones I had into the sack, then lifted the end of my mattress and pulled Mr. Taylor's sullied knife from underneath. I looked at it and let the moonlight shine off the blade. I practiced stabbing at a patty roller, then stuck it in my bag. Then I dug round in my box till I found the piece of paper that Mr. Highgate had gave to me. I looked at the name of the man who'd helped him, then stuck the paper in my pocket. I looked round my room to see if there was anything else that we might use on this adventure. I didn't know what it was, but something made me start feeling a little fragile. I didn't know if it was because this might be the last time I'd ever see my room again, or if it was because I knowed if I did make it back, Ma and Pa were going to be out of their minds with being mad at what I'd done. I sniffed the looseness back down in my nose, then went out on the stoop. Ma said, Everything all right, Elijah? Doggone it all. Ma was hearing things that weren't being said again.
Yes, ma'am.
Pa said,
Don't you worry, son. Things has ways of working themselves out.
Yes, sir. I hugged my ma and pa for maybe the last time. They told me to be good, and we all walked off the stoop. They went left, and I went right. Mr. Leroy was still where I left him at, in the woods. He pulled me back on Jingle Boy. I took the paper with the address out of my pocket and said, Sir, this is who we're going to look for once we get to that village in Michigan. Mr. Highgate said he's a mighty good man. For the first time I can ever remember since I've known him, Mr. Leroy smiled. And I can't say which looked more unnatural, him trying to smile or old Flapjack trying to run. He said,
Elijah, this here's gonna turn out all right. I feel it in my heart.
Me, Mr. Leroy, and Jingle Boy started heading southwest, getting ready to catch a hold of the Stealer of Dreams.
Chapter 20. The Death of Mr. Leroy.
I said it afore, and I know there ain't many folks who are going to agree with me about this, but riding a horse ain't nowhere near as good as riding a mule, especially when you're galloping hard down a bad road heading for Windsor, especially when you know the man you're riding behind ain't got no intention of stopping till you're on the ferry that goes across the Detroit River, especially when it feels like they'd gone and stretched out the road twixt Buxton and Windsor by another couple hundred miles. Why, I was getting bumped round on Jingle Boy so much that I knowed those glasses of milk Cooter's ma made me drink had gone and churned themselves into a big lump of butter in my belly. And whilst I might have fallen to butter, it ain't nowhere near as good tasting if the way it gets into your belly is as milk. All I could do was squeeze my eyes shut, mash my face into Mr. Leroy's back,